is Mia Faroletto, publisher of New Observations magazine, and I am delighted to have Rebecca Hardcastle Wright as our guest today. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks, Mia. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Rebecca is a leading expert on cosmic consciousness and ET contact. She is committed to building an exoconscious civilization co-created by humans, ETs, and multi-dimensional beings. Rebecca is the founder and director of the Institute for Exoconsciousness. She's the author of several books, including Exoconsciousness and The Exoconscious Human. She's currently working on her third book to be published this year, and will be exploring the role of the exoconscious humans in our future. So delighted to have you here, Rebecca.
Thanks, Mia.
And can't wait to jump into all these important issues. Where would you like to start?
We can start with exoconscious humans because that's the focal point of my work.
Perfect. What inspired you to write your first book, Exoconsciousness?
I came up with the word, actually the word exoconsciousness was given to me back in the early 2000s. And it was one of those drop-in moments, literally. I define it kind of in that biblical sense where the word became flesh. I was a single mom. I was raising my kids, and I was working a full-time job and going to school, and so I had a lot on my plate, and I woke up one morning, and I just, you know how those old radio alarm clocks would go off, and the music would play, and so I hit the snooze button. I reached over, hit the snooze button. I just thought, I remember distinctly thinking, oh, my golly, before I, like, pack all these lunches and get these kids off to school and go to work, like, I just need a moment. So I hit the snooze button, and my head fell back on the pillow, and that word, exoconsciousness, came into my body. It was like the word became flesh, literally came in my body and sort of saturated me at a cellular level is the best way I can describe it. So I had been reading a lot of consciousness literature. I'd been an ET experiencer since childhood. I'd been going into other testimonies and witness reports of extraterrestrial experiencers. I'd been actually part of one of the longest-running experiencer groups in the nation in Fountain Hills, Arizona, where I lived. So I had been literally saturated also just with all this information. And so that word was exoconsciousness was like a gestalt to me. It just brought everything together, and I knew from that point on that my work belonged in consciousness and that I needed to stay that course, and that was one of the purposes of my life. Interestingly enough, in 1997 was the Phoenix Lights event where the large, possibly mile-wide craft flew over Phoenix, Arizona, and was witnessed by people looking at the Hale-Bopp Comet. It happened on March 13th, 1997. And so all of my friends in this community, many of them were like calling each other, and they all went out to see it, and I didn't see it. So they all went into UFO research, and they became, you know, really leading UFO researchers, like people like Lindsay Tai, Jim Delatoso, you know, many, many people out of that community in Phoenix. And when that happened, I knew at that point, well, this is just one more obvious sign that you don't belong in that field. You belong in the exoconsciousness field. You belong in the field of consciousness. You belong in the field of experience and subjectivity.
Well, the intention and the power of the spoken and written word are something that I think perhaps the average person does not pay close enough attention to, and needs to really consider in a new way, because both thought and word are extremely powerful as we create our lives and our futures.
Oh, writing is, it's an art. It's an art form. It's discipline. It's sitting down. It's living in your waking life and in your dream life with this book that you're, this piece of art, this book that you're bringing into being. So I'm so excited about all the self-publishing opportunities now, because, it's not about, who's a celebrity or, who's going to make the most money for the publishing companies now. It's really about each individual on their quest to bring forward a facet of their life that they want to move deeply into living and writing about and sharing with other people. So that's,
you're
that's
so right. You're so right. And now you're working on your third book.
Right. My second book was how exoconscious humans guide our spacefaring future. So I just it's a small book. I looked at the role of we exoconscious humans in the space sector of the economy, literally, and why we belong there and how we're necessary. And then my third book is, and then I wrote a chapter for Beyond UFOs with the Free Group, their book on the science of consciousness. I analyzed their survey of almost 5,000 people that they did over 5 years. And then my third book is called The Exoconscious Human, Claiming Your Psychic Intelligence in a Transhuman World. So that's been an exciting...
that's quite a title. I think you've covered everything there.
Right. It's just,
What an interesting time for us to be alive, huh?
Well, what an interesting time for us to be alive, as, I really feel as I did this as I'm working on this book and I'm kind of wrapping up the last chapters, I be honest with you, I've been working on this book since probably 2016. I just researching and living with it, and I couldn't write it for the longest time. I couldn't write it because it was too harrowing. Just everything I read, I was like, oh my golly, this can't be true. And, then something else would roll in. And then I started putting together the different layers that integrated with each other in transhumanism. And that was kind of an astounding infrastructure discovery of how everything isn't separate in that world, but it's intimately related, and the extent of data sharing and the extent of how it's connected to us as humans. And so that was another point. It's almost like I had to wade through these almost tsunamis of information and data and come out the other side and feel like, okay, so what does this mean for us as exoconscious humans? And now that I'm on the other side and almost finished with it, I have it strengthened my whole heart and spirit muscle about how important psychic intelligence is, how important it is for us to, use those abilities of ESP and intuition and telekinesis and being able to understand and know the future and how that is really going to guide us and the whole role of nature in all of this. I mean, technocracy's been around since probably the 1880s in terms of a formal philosophy or an economic structure. But, I mean, nature's been around a lot longer than that, including
humans.
So it's, this is just another sticky wicket that we're putting ourselves in, quite frankly, is how I've come to see it. And it's like when you're in a relationship. I think writing a book is like being in a relationship. It's when you're in a relationship, this is mirroring you. Like your partner mirrors things back to you that you need to see to yourself, of yourself. You may think, oh, that's my partner doing that, but that's you seeing yourself in your partner oftentimes also. So I think a book's a similar kind of relationship dynamic where things I was seeing about transhumanism were also things in myself that I wanted to see and I needed to see in order to strengthen my exoconsciousness, in order to strengthen my psychic intelligence.
Well, do you feel that that these latent gifts, which are in man, because, you know, a small percentage of the population actually uses them on a regular basis, do you think the fact that we're not exercising that muscle is just ushering in transhumanism more quickly? Is it a form of acquiescence that we have parts of ourselves shut down?
I think to an extent, but I think that it's also there's also another. I think that there is an individual layer where people, it's easier just to default to living your life on social media or just default to, you know, allowing Google or whoever to kind of rule your life and create your reality. But I think on a deeper level that we're also, there's also an evolutionary aspect to all of this happening. And, you know, some people in the mystery schools called it Armon, that there would be these Armonic forces that would come in and we'd be dominated by this machine-like intelligence. And, you know, 100 years ago, mystery schools were talking about this, and that's exactly what's happened. You know, Rudolf Steiner wrote books about how this was going to happen to us, and now it's happening. So I think there's also waves of evolution in humankind, in humans, that's causing this to also happen. And I think the whole movement into space, writing my book, I began to see that each chapter I examine an exoconscious aspect, for example, of consciousness, and then I examine a transhuman aspect of consciousness, and then at the end I do a section on common ground, because I feel like even if you're completely living in your psychic abilities and your exoconscious abilities, we're not really at that point where that tipping point where we can say that's where I'm living 100%. I mean, we still not need our computers. You and I need a way to communicate to each other from, you know, where we're geographically living, you know, or to connect to the world. So I think that it's not about, you know, demonizing transhumanism, but it's about looking at how it's different. It's a different path. This is where transhumanism is taking you. Is that where you want to go? This is where exoconsciousness is taking you. Is this where you want to go? And then also seeing that there are places where the two paths also intersect.
Right. Well, perhaps it'll be interesting to see if the grid ever does go down, whether humans will be forced to develop their psychic skills, even in terms of communicating with the people in our lives. I mean, we've all had the experiences of thinking of someone and the phone rings and there they are. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if there is some sort of corona mass ejection where mm-hmm. everything, you know, goes off the grid, perhaps that will force us to turn inwards in a way that mm-hmm. will, in fact, expand our consciousness.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that transhumanism is forcing us to do that. Those who have chosen to wake up to, you know, what's really happening, what's really occurring in the different layers of the reality that has been created in secret, you know, for the last 50 years or more, that needs to be looked at now. So, yeah, I think that I think that to me woke up in me my need to trust myself even more. I mean, I'm a therapist. So, and I do therapy very intensely with my clients. I do 2-hour sessions. So you really get to know somebody. And
yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's just a modality that I found that works the best. And I notice now I'm to the point now that if a client, like, for example, I went into work the other day and the assistant said, oh, you know, so-and-so's coming in to see you tonight. And I said, oh, yeah, I knew she was coming. She went to me, she goes, how'd you know she was coming? And I said, I don't know. I just knew yesterday that she was probably going to come today. You know, you just get in that kind of frequency, shared frequency with each other. And you know when somebody's ready to reach out to you or you're ready to reach out to them. I mean, you could call it Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenic field. I think that it's something, I think that one of the most exciting parts of exoconsciousness or being an exoconscious human is that, you know, together as a community, we're going to be able to go out and spend time and energy exploring, you know, what is this field of consciousness, because exoconsciousness has always maintained that it's consciousness beyond the brain. So anytime you do transhuman research, you're always encapsulated within the brain, within the biological body, which, of course, they're now turning into a synthetic biological body. And yet we know, because of our psychic intelligence, that there's a field with which we interact that has, you know, beings and information and Akashic records just this plethora of energy that we can read and we can access. So I think what transhumanism is going to actually do is prove itself to be self-limiting because it is so brain intensive. And it is such a cybernetic feedback loop, brain-intensive project. I mean, it's just the way it's been. I think quantum computers are kind of trying to break out of that and, you know, move more into, you know, a wider expanse. But even then, that's just a wider expanse of data. You know, they talk about, oh, you know, we're gonna deal with the entanglement theory and this, that. And, but, you know, when you really look at what they're doing, it's just more and more data. All it is.
It's just right.
Another
it's true.
Closed loop of data. So I think, you know, that's going to give a window of opportunity for exoconscious humans to say, okay, what is this field? You know, what, and scientifically, you know, scientists and researchers that are interested in going out into this, like Rupert Sheldrake did, and say, you know, what is this? What's this mean? And, you know, it involves all forms of consciousness, including life after death. I think it's going to put humans on a completely different level with dying, with formation, how they form their soul, with death itself. So I think that we're looking at radical shifts in how we as humans see ourselves because of this field of consciousness.
I agree. Tell us about the Institute for Exoconsciousness and how it factors into all of these areas of exploration.
Back in around 2016 or so, I had been working with Dr. Edgar Mitchell in Washington, D.C. With his Quantrip group. We were researching and doing applications for zero-point energy that also included research into the extraterrestrial presence and consciousness. So I had worked with him and, you know, been involved in some really exciting things there. And then he had passed away, and I just spent some time thinking, you know, now what? You know, what am I going to do next? And I just felt a big pull toward forming an organization that would be a post-disclosure organization. By that I mean that it wouldn't be so involved with, you know, what did the government know and when did they know it? And what did the Navy pilots know and when did they know it? And, you know, kind of running around trying to get intelligence to tell you the truth. I mean, that's another show in and of itself. So
right. That's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, don't hold your breath. So I felt like, okay, look, you know, what in my life had I seen? And I had seen two significant things in my life around experiencers. Number one, with Dr. Ruth Hover and her experiencer group, that was a very small group. I don't know, 15, maybe 20 people at the most. And out of that little group, there were like, you know, almost 11 books, I think 11 books that were published. There were medical inventions that were created. I mean, people were just doing this amazing work, and I was really stunned when I looked at what a small group of people. And we didn't even spend time necessarily talking about that, but people just like quietly went home and started writing books and doing experiments and bringing forth inventions. And then when I worked with Edgar, I saw that on another level, this kind of a replication, that here we were working with scientists, but we were also working with people that would send us emails kind of like out of the blue. And they would be experiencers living kind of in the middle of nowhere, and they would come up with these brilliant theories about zero-point energy and how to use it, as well as brilliant inventions that they had. And they were getting that through their extraterrestrial contact. And so I thought, you know, that's it. It's I think the Institute needs to be based on doing. It needs to be. So we're an organization of builders and doers. So we're co-creators. So we're taking the information that and experiences that we receive, the upgrades and the transformations that we receive, and the downloads that we receive, and we're actually creating exoconscious inventions, exoconscious healing modalities, exoconscious new forms of communication. And I knew that that's what I wanted the Institute to be. So that's who we're supportive of. It's really not an organization that, you know, goes out and kind of looks at the stars, or, you know, we're not an organization of first-time experiencers. We're an organization of seasoned, mature, ongoing experiencers. I mean, people in our group have ongoing experiences. And we actually structured our institute such that these different layers of people involved, like in the middle, are ETs and multidimensionals. So the different groups and the different individual ETs that we work with are also, you know, for our board and for our executive committee, you know, we're working one-on-one with them in moving forward this Institute for Exoconsciousness. So it's exciting. I mean, when I look at all of the issues to be solved, I mean, I work with an alternative physician. He's an MD, who became an alternative physician here in Scottsdale, Arizona. And when I look at it, just all of the health problems and all of the health issues that are coming up now in terms of, you know, electromagnetics or particles in the air or Morgellons or chemtrails or vaccines, just health, just that one sector of health alone, I mean, the number of inventions that exoconscious entrepreneurs could bring forth would just be radically important, not to mention going into the water supply. You know, how do we clean up the water? I think all of these planetary environmental issues are certainly exoconscious inventors are going to be addressing those, as well as space travel, inventions in terms of space and space travel.
Exactly. When you say that ETs are at the center of the Institute, what do you mean exactly?
Well, that everybody who serves on the board, so just starting with the Board of Advisors, so everyone that serves on the Board of Advisors is expected to be responsive and in a form of communication and contact ongoing with their ETs and multidimensionals, and to bring that forward as they work with the Institute. So it's not just about, you know, laying out this, you know, a business plan, or it's not just, you know, having an agenda, but it's that this is a shared agenda. This is an agenda between humans and ETs and multidimensionals. When we look at that co-creative relationship, it's a very different relationship than, say, religion. So religion, it's, you know, they were the gods, and we were the people here on earth that worship the gods, and the gods told us what to do, and, you know, there grew out of that then a, you know, a body of discipline and dogma, tradition, oftentimes texts, but, you know, all that was codified then, and that stopped. The canon was stopped and put in place. And all religions kind of have that. There's the codification kind of in. So what we're saying is that it's a peer-to-peer relationship. So my peer-to-peer relationship with extraterrestrials is an ongoing open platform, open-ended open platform that is going to move us on a trajectory into the future. That wasn't possible, quite frankly, with religion. That's
well, I don't necessarily think they're mutually exclusive, but
they're not. Yeah, they're not, because much of religion. I mean, there was a book written by the woman who chairs the philosophy of religion department at North Carolina University of North Carolina in Wilmington, and she wrote a book called American Cosmic. And what she does is she goes through a lot of different religious events and witnessing, like Fatima and that sort of thing, and says, you know, these were religious experiences, but they were also, when looked at, are pretty obviously, there's a great similarity between those experiences and UFO extraterrestrial experiences. I think, as you know, I come from a religious background. I think that that religion will more and more gravitate to the field of exoconsciousness and see it as a field where they can learn and expand their doctrine and their texts and the information that they're sharing. And I mean, extraterrestrials, experiencers have always come from a witness standpoint. So if you look at the Bible, if you took all the witness testimony out of the Bible, well, Old Testament and New Testament, there wouldn't be any. It's all witness testimony. So we're both coming from the same place. So yeah, you're right. It's not mutually exclusive.
Well, I also think there are some truly huge inherent problems in everything that we're experiencing at this moment in time with the expansion of consciousness. And my personal opinion is that it's not just about exoconsciousness, but it's about all consciousness. And there are, as Rudolf Steiner writes about extensively, you know, there are kingdoms, there's the angelic realm, the devic and elemental realm, the animal kingdom. We're surrounded by consciousness in a myriad of forms. And to my thinking, our role is to be open to communicating with all of them. ETs are just one part of that. And from my experience, I've seen so many people that I am convinced have no idea of who they're connecting to when they're, you know, making connections. They're just, you know, beginning this process and have not learned discernment to the degree that needs to happen in order to be grounded and bring the information in a really helpful way.
I totally agree with you. I mean, really, what we're talking about is a conscious universe that's seeing the world not as a machine, but as, even though the world does act like a machine at points, but seeing the world as a conscious universe. And I totally agree with you. Some people don't have any idea who they're communicating with. That's why we spend a lot of time in the Institute talking about this is an experience you have to mature into, and by that, you know, any kind of maturity includes making mistakes and taking the wrong path and having self-correction and always being open to learn and to, you know, accept feedback. So, oh, absolutely. But there has to be, I think that the one thing that the Institute does represent is that it is possible to hold yourself to a standard of trying to be mature and trying to integrate and ground through this experience with extraterrestrials and multidimensionals, which also includes, of course, the angelic realm. And for many people, it also includes the diva realm. That's why we use the word extraterrestrials and the plant world also. So I think that those are all multidimensional worlds or just energetic forms that people deal with. So, yeah, I mean, this is just one segment of what we're, you know, trying to express. But it did, historically, it grew out of people who had ET experience and then broadened into, you know, people that had multidimensional experience. But that maturing process, there's not, I mean, other than religion, and there's not a lot, which is a different path, you know, it's more of a communitarian path. Religion's more if you go with your church, you go with your community. There's not a lot of individual guidelines and guidebooks for how people mature into this, and that's one of the things that we want to do at the Institute, because that involves morality, that involves having a personal set of ethics, that involves, you know, stretching yourself to be a sovereign individual with, you know, compassion and holding others in compassion and respect. You know, you really start to hold yourself to a higher standard, I think, when you go into this, and humility for sure is part of what this Institute is about.
Right, you understand that the universe is far greater than just you or I.
Or each other. I mean, just, I think that whole, you get into that anytime you go to as above, so below, or you're the microcosm of yourself in relationship to the macrocosm of the universe. It's just, it's a very humbling experience. And we can go back to your comment about writing books and using your words and using your language and using your symbolism. It, even when you connect to those systems, that is even more humbling when we start to look at that, or the history of art and how that was expressed.
Yeah, there's so much. There are so many different levels. I just feel that the focus on ETs and, you know, ETs coming to save us, which many people seem to think is going to happen, keeps us from opening up our own centers of being where we can interpret art and in work with nature, you know, allow so many other possibilities to enter into our lives. We just have to be careful, because the ETs are not going to come and save us.
Well, that's why, you know, we really use that word co-creation, because if you're a co-creator, then you're not looking for a savior. You're looking for a peer relationship. You're looking, and really, even when we say that, we're saying, you know, we're looking for how do we move out into that field of consciousness, whether it's with plants or animals, you know, how do we move out into that field of consciousness and begin to, I mean, I think we're just at the cusp of doing this, because, you know, 20 years ago, religion was still hugely dominant in any kind of thinking about this. So I think we're just at that. We're just in those very initial steps as humans of knowing what all this is going to mean for us. And, you know, thinking, and there's that question, you know, are we humans capable of this? And I would answer absolutely. And I agree with you. It's got to be done cautiously. It's got to be done with awareness. It has to be done with a gradual awakening. And certainly it has to be done in a gentle, nurturing manner, and not by, you know, trauma and fear and that sort of thing.
Well, we have so much of that on television and in the movies. Our entertainment industry is overrun with fear and fear of the unknown, and certainly fear of ETs.
Oh yeah, that's all. Yeah, that was all manufactured. Sure, absolutely. And I think we're in this interesting place right now, especially when you look at mainstream ufology and, you know, Tom DeLonge and To the Stars Initiative and the CIA and Luis Elizondo and, you know, these, you know, CIA, Pentagon, you know, people all of a sudden are going to be our guides into ufology. And it's just, you know, I've been in that field. I've been in that field professionally for over 20 years, and I know many of the people in that field. And I'll just tell a quick story that kind of shows sort of where I am with all this. I was outside Philadelphia speaking at a conference, and it was a UFO conference, so there were a lot of people, MUFON people, UFO type people, and so I had been presented about exoconscious humans, and I talked a little bit about the intelligence community, and I looked out in the audience and I said, who out here believes that the government and intelligence and the military know things about UFOs and extraterrestrials that you don't know? Thinking that no one would raise their hand. And everyone raised their hand.
Yeah, I would have thought the entire audience would raise their hand.
So the entire audience raised their hand. Okay, I'm naive. I mean, I thought, wow, you know, don't you? And that's sort of back to that whole, the viewpoint of exoconsciousness is, sure, you know, you can read all these books and do all this research, but it all really comes down to, you know, this vortex of awareness inside you. And I think that there comes a time that, you know, when you're studying consciousness or UFOs or extraterrestrials or, you know, plant consciousness or whatever, that there's a kind of a collapse that happens, and you still refer back to it, but inside of you, you hold a knowing that there may be some things or tweaks that you maybe didn't know, but other than that, like you embody this information and you know it.
Right.
And I was stunned that I think I was kind of expecting many more people to be at that place, especially because it was an older audience and many of them had been in ufology for decades, you know, maybe 40 years, some of them.
I think there's a big difference, though, between traditional ufology and people who are focused on consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more traditional ufologists are interested in the phenomenon as opposed mm-hmm. to the experience.
And exoconsciousness, it very much identifies as a subjective experience. I mean, I have people come up to me at these conferences and say, oh my golly, especially UFO, you know, I've been sitting in my backyard for 10 years, nothing ever happens, you know, I want to see a UFO. And I look at them and say, well, what about what's inside of you? You know, just maybe you need to turn your perspective around a little bit. But this has been, it's like, you know, like when we grew up, you know, I know your childhood faith. I think you were Catholic, and I was Protestant. I mean, you know, we all were given an objective, we were given an objective God, and you know, outside of ourselves. That's step number one. And ufology's still there. They're looking for that UFO outside of themselves.
Right. Yeah. Except I was raised Catholic, but from the time I was, I don't know, 3, 4, I was able to communicate with animals and always knew how psychic I was. So, you know, there were lots of other things going on.
Well, you're a childhood experiencer, a childhood psychic experiencer. Yeah, absolutely.
So I never quite, bought into the whole organized religion thing. And certainly I have a very difficult time with all the pedophiles, the pedophilia in the Catholic Church, which my family, fortunately, my brothers were not impacted by that. But, I know a number of priests who were involved in child molestation, and friends of ours growing up who were also altar boys were molested. So you realize just how close to home it all is, not just with the Catholic Church, but in many walks of life.
Right. Yeah. But there is, I agree with you. There's a very strong cord between religion and consciousness. Well, if you think back, I mean, that's one of the things Edgar Mitchell used to say. He used to say, 400 years ago when science was created, and, the age of reason, and science took all of objective research and, geography and biology and all the sciences, sociology and consciousness was left to religion. Religion kept consciousness. They didn't do anything with it for 400 years, is what I say. What did they do with it for 400 years? They haven't done anything with it. So it's like, it's just interesting that now I think that there is a push within religion to say, what about these witness reports? What about consciousness? What about, God is this field of consciousness? And I think it's going to change religion in a very positive way. That's my hope.
What do you think about these witness reports, these, traditional classic UFO witness reports and abduction reports? What's your take on all of that?
Well, that was one of those points where I was kind of solidified my perspective of that when I worked with that Edgar Mitchell's, that the Free Foundation that Ray Hernandez does, the survey that they did a 5-year survey of like 5,000 people in 100 countries. And at the end, as I wrote a chapter in their book, and as I examined their information, I came to see that 80 to 90% of them did not have an abduction experience, that they were open and wanting more of them, and that they felt like it was a kind experience. It wasn't an abusive experience. So I looked at that number and I thought, oh my goodness, what's happened here? With all this abduction literature that, of course I've read, you've read, we've all seen the cartoons and the movies. So, you look at all this abduction literature and then we say, where did that come from? Did that come from the government? Did that come from, military abduction programs? Did that come from, feeding people to different psychologists, Bud Hopkins and early people like Bud Hopkins and John Mack, people that were, fed into these programs, like where did they come from? And, why all this abuse that happened? And, you know, it was a very, you know, it's kind of like the cattle abduction thing. I mean, it was very like human abduction,
the cattle mutilation.
Abduction. Yeah, cattle mutilation. And I just I've always felt that was never my experience. Like I said, I'm a childhood experiencer. That was never my experience. I mean, was it confusing sometimes? Absolutely. Was it abusive? No, never. And I just feel like some people do, you know, hold that energy of, you know, I was abused and it was the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life and I'll never recover again. Or some people felt that it was abusive and like with John Mack's work, moved beyond that to kind of a spiritual transformation in the midst of all that. So it makes me wonder. And sometimes high profile people that I've met that were experiencers and they've gone on and on about all these things that have happened and abductions that, you know, it comes, you know, when you find out where they came from, they came from military families. You know, they were put in programs. And I think
that's interesting.
A lot of that,
that's a very interesting correlation.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that's gone on. A lot of those were mind control programs. I mean, just think how pervasive mind control programs are and, you know, creating different alters in their minds and, you know, giving them that experience. I mean, that was rampant. Now they don't have to have mind control programs anymore. They just, you know, spray a chemtrail or run a CERN, you know, experiment, change our minds.
Right.
So it says maybe that was all part of that era of mind control. I don't know. Possibly. Makes sense.
It's hard to know.
They're all are gone, so we don't really know.
Yeah, it's hard to know the extent of all of that and the rampant drug use, of course.
The drug experiments. Oh.
Played into all
my
of
graduate
that.
School. Timothy Leary left Harvard, came over to my graduate school, and in the 60s, and they were like dropping acid on Good Friday.
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was pervasive in the academic community and in intelligence.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all working for intelligence and government, so it was one and the same. But just very interesting. And you know, I work with clients that have had, you know, repercussions from LSD and different, you know, different psychic drugs. And it's a different, they have a very different experience as they move into communication. You know, it's not grounded in something that happens naturally in their body or with their mind and their spirit.
Yeah, I would assume it would be distorted in some way.
Well,
you know,
I don't know if
there
it's
would
distor-
be
yeah,
there
it's,
would be
it's
some.
It's not grounded. It's not grounded.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And it's very hard. You know, the clients I worked with, it's very hard to get grounded then when that happens because it's such an intense brain, chemical brain interface. That you know, putting all the pieces together and weaving that into something understandable in your life that you can be grounded and integrated with takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, here we are at the start of 2020, a new decade, and I'm curious to know from your perspective where you see the evolved human or exoconscious human moving into this time period?
I think that there will be segments of humans that will gather together and find some kind of community where they can not only express but also live out their awareness of this multidimensional aspect of consciousness, multidimensional beings, extraterrestrials, angels, divas, that this is, you know, it's a funny, there's a funny thing happening, because I think, I feel like, I don't know, I kind of like to see what you think about this too. I think for many years that many of us separated from religion and as a kind of a communal hierarchical structure, a dogmatic structure, and we moved into spirituality as a very independent exploration, independent excursion into our own awakening, into our own spiritual kind of getting to know our spiritual self through different, you know, some people, you know, like we talk about extraterrestrials, it could be, you know, divas, angelic, but, you know, reading into the literature of that, of spirituality. And now I feel like we are kind of another turn in the cycle, almost, turn of the wheel, that we're going to move back into these kind of smaller, more intimate groups of coalescing the knowledge that each of us has brought into more of a community of learning and working together. So it kind of went from community to individuality back to another form of community. That's where I see it going, because I think we're going to be moving, especially due to transhumanism, that's going to cause, in all of this whole kind of virtual reality that's being created. You know, there's like the sentient world simulation that's got an avatar of everyone, and I don't know, at one point it was 62 countries. I don't know how many countries it is now, but that, you know, moving into this virtual reality that we're all being shoved into, and finding that we don't want to live there. We don't want to live in that virtual reality. And so where do we want to live? And I think that we'll find that place in small groups, and it won't be via a savior. It will be via ourselves and our own strengths of what we've come through. That's what I see happening. What do you think?
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I as you know, since you participated in the first one and are coming back in this coming July to present at the third little conference that I've organized, having been an experiencer 2 years ago, I began to organize these little gatherings once a year of speaker, a very small group of attendees, no more than 35, with 6 to 10 speakers, and to really get to know other people who have shared interests and experiences, and to basically, you know, find members of the same tribe, just to pass on information. And the interesting thing that I've found through both of the last two conferences and connecting with attendees is what happens when a group of like-minded people come together in this way, and the energy that is shared and how transformative that is and has been for the people who've come, who then have gone back and into return to their lives in various parts of the country and internationally. And within, in some cases, days, their lives have been changed in very profound ways. So I know that change is possible in a very direct way, and that when working together energetically in this kind of way, in fact, what we're doing is freeing each other psychically, spiritually, intellectually, emotionally. And it's been fascinating to see and very rewarding to see.
Yeah, I think we're at the same place. I think we're seeing the same type thing, because I think once you've gone on that, whether it's, you know, the Odyssey or the Iliad or whatever, you know, we always have this, you know, hero figure that strikes out on their own and finds out their own wisdom. And I think that's been a dominant archetype for, you know, for decades now. But I think now we're coming, and then they go home. And I think that this, you know, going home in a different way and going home to a community is what we're going to be seeing more and more of. And, you know, I admire what you do at your conferences, and because that accomplishes with the people what something that is not necessarily a person's not able to accomplish on their own as an individual. That same transformation.
That's true to some extent, but you know, their individual seeking has what has gotten them to the conference in the first place. So it is part of a journey, you know, it is part of an odyssey, and then going back and sharing it it's like making a painting and hanging it, you know, for the viewer. It's all part of, mm-hmm. you know, that end result of sharing what you've made or what you've learned or where you've been.
Yeah, the doing. And it's the doing.
Yeah.
That's what the Institute is. It's communities of doing. And it's not just about sitting around and, you know, oh, I want to go back to that same experience, so, you know, I'll drop my microdose of acid again. It's really about, you know, taking that experience, integrating it, living with it in a community of colleagues and people that you have affinity with, and creating something with it, doing something with it.
Exactly. Constructive.
Yeah. And it's also, I kind of talk about, you know, exoconsciousness is really moving beyond the event. You know, the event was one thing, or, you know, the series of events could be another thing. And I think that you definitely move beyond that. And what you move beyond to is like what you were talking about, this life where you have this seamless ability to move dimensionally. And I think also, you know, going back to your question about what do I see in 2020, I think that we're going to see humans that have adapted, because we're an adaptive species. You know, we need to always remember that. And we are creating structures, and transhuman structures and technocratic structures that we are all going to have to adapt to. And I think that one of our adaptive abilities is going to be, sure, you know, I can go on social media, or I could go on the internet, or, you know, I can do a Google search, or, you know, I can have my bank account or my doctor's files uploaded to a satellite, and I can live in that world, and that transhuman world, that technocratic world, and I can also live in a spiritual world. I can also live in a world of the field of consciousness. I can also live in a world where I'm using my psychic intelligence and connecting with different layers of consciousness. So I think that the adaption that humans are going to be doing out of this transhuman era or world is going to be something that we haven't even dreamed possible. I think it's going to strengthen humans in ways that we've really never seen in the evolution of the human race.
I think you're right. I think we truly are on the verge of a brave new frontier, and it's going to be a real, you know, rocky ride, at least initially, and we better buckle our seatbelts.
And I think you know, probably transhumanists and, you know, technocrats, they see that too. you know, they feel like that's what they're doing too, that, you know, this, the coding is, or these, you know, computers are going to take us, or, you know, satellite array above the Earth is going to take us to this other new world that they're all going to be living in. And, you know, people will, like, it's back to Steiner again. Like Steiner said, people are going to choose to live in that realm. They're going to live in that realm, and they're going to see that realm as their brave new world. As their,
right.
you know, transformation. I'm just saying, for exoconsciousness and for the Institute of Exoconsciousness, we see, and like as you and I think I agree, that, you know, it's really into our brave new world is consciousness.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's where our challenge lies, I believe, going within and mm-hmm. and claiming, you know, our true selves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I look forward to having you back. How will people be able to get in touch with you?
Well, my website is exoconsciousness.com. I also have a newsletter that we send out for the Institute every month or two. So if you want to subscribe to the newsletter, past archive of newsletters is at my blog, which is just RebeccaHardcastleWright.com. But from exoconsciousness.com, you can email me, and or my emails are hardcastlewright@gmail.com, if you want to just directly email me. And I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have your listeners join our community, and I'll see if your listeners are coming to the Contact and Consciousness conference. I'll see them there.
Wonderful. It's a fantastic newsletter, everyone. So do get
you.
In touch with Rebecca and sign up for it. I look forward to it, you know, every month or so when it arrives in my mailbox. It's always chock full of all kinds of interesting people and articles and information. So do you have any other upcoming events planned before the conference in July that you'd like to share?
Before July? Oh, yeah, I'm not sure when this is going to be broadcast, but this weekend is an Aliens Revealed online summit that a colleague of mine put together. That's very well done. It's a free online summit of people talking about different aspects of ufology and exoconsciousness and exopolitics. And also, I'm participating in a Spirit Fest in Eagleville, Colorado in October. So, and also, every year I try to make Lynn Key Tai's Phoenix Lights show.
Uh-huh.
She shows her Phoenix Lights movie at cinema here in Scottsdale, and it's always sold out.
It must be phenomenal to go
and
celebrate the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, and you would think year after year that like the crowds would get smaller. The crowds just get bigger. It's such an exciting thing.
Great.
She's done such a beautiful job of, you know, just archiving and holding that whole history of that Phoenix Lights event for this community. So that's going to be in February. So that's also going to be in the newsletter. So.
So sign up for the newsletter, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
You're welcome, Mia. Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.